Francis Drake was going home a hero. After pushing off from Plymouth in 1577, he was the first Englishman to traverse Magellan's Pass into the Pacific Ocean, where he terrorized the shocked Spanish colonies and seized some of their riches, including 26 tons of Peruvian silver. Drake then made a long, circuitous run to the west coast of North America, where he claimed land for the Queen and, presumably, tried to find the Northwest Passage. But even failing this last task, Drake was primed for a knighthood when he got back to England. But by the time Drake reached the west coast, his boat was leaking. Badly. And kept getting worse. The Golden Hind was not ready to start home across the vast Pacific Ocean. Drake needed a safe harbor where he could beach and repair the Golden Hind, a process called careening that required the ship to be tilted all the way up on each side in turn, a multi-week effort that would leave it defenseless against the angry Spanish. The west coast was virtually uncharted and safe harbors were hard to find. Drake found a bad bay when he needed shelter from foul weather, but it was not suitable for a lengthy careening, so Drake persisted until, in June 1579, he found a, quote, fair and good bay, end quote. Drake and his crew repaired the Golden Hind in this shelter, all while establishing friendly relations with the local native population, hosting a plate of brass that claimed the land for the Queen, and apparently leaving other artifacts as well. The Golden Hind sailed away 5 weeks later to complete its circumnavigation, returning to England in September 1580. Next year, Queen Elizabeth made Francis Drake a sir by knighting him on the deck of the fully refurbished Golden Hind. Much is documented about what is called Drake's famous voyage, including many details of his North American visit, but not exactly where he landed. And the clues that survive are ambiguous and contradictory, providing fertile ground for alternative theories to grow. If Wikipedia is any guide, sorry, hear this out, there are at least 40 locations that have been proposed over the years as the actual site, ranging in latitude from Alaska at 58 degrees north to Baja California at 25 degrees north, a span of 33 degrees of latitude or almost 2,300 miles. North to south. Many, surely most of these postulated sites are not credible, but at least several are. Some of these plausible sites have passionate advocates and equally passionate non-believers. The whereabouts of Drake's actual landing site has been disputed since at least California statehood in 1850, as argued in books, articles, and other writings and statements by academics, professionals, and amateurs. The controversy that simmers today is framed mostly by amateur historians who argue for recognition of single, specific sites through their social media and self-published books. In this hour, this amateur historian will review, from the proverbial 10,000-foot level, the status of the quest for the actual site. Not that it will resolve the issue, even in my own mind, much less the minds of others with greater knowledge. But I will outline one curious subplot of the famous voyage by introducing the five most, let's say, current of the proposed landing spots, provide some chum if you want to do your own research, and give some guidance to visiting proposed sites yourself. I also make some recommendations for additional research on certain artifacts purportedly from Drake's landing that might enlighten this debate. And who am I? My name is Kevin Woodruff. I'm recently retired and trying my hand as an amateur historian. You can be the judge. I first heard about Drake's North American landing and the phrases plate of brass and Drake's estero in my California history class at UC Berkeley in 1975. Though I've lived in Northern California ever since, I didn't give the matter much thought until, somehow, I got the bug, if only a mild variant, and started my own efforts to assess whether there is a reasonably certain, or even just a likely, location for Drake's landing. I have read, skimmed, and sampled vintage books, plus articles, websites, and other sources, and have viewed or visited each of the five sites I will present. This podcast is based on this research and my own analysis and judgments. In case it's not clear yet, I will not be discussing any other aspect of the famous voyage or any of Drake's many other exploits, which are amply documented elsewhere. In this podcast, I will describe one notable West Coast location long associated with Drake. I will then focus on the five specific sites various Drake researchers are now proposing, generally on their social media and websites. Finally, I will discuss the artifacts found at some locations and their implications for the search for the actual site. But first, I will review the various sources from Drake's time that may, or may not, provide clues to the location of his fair and good bay. In assessing potential Drake landing sites, researchers tend to start with the same basic Drake vintage publications. Tales of the famous voyage began circulating soon after Drake's return, and many survive in written form. Some of these early sources provide specific clues about Drake's actual landing site. But these sources do not always agree and are open to interpretation. As we shall see, some sources have been interpreted to make cases for multiple possible spots. Several printed narratives document aspects of Drake's landing, the most cited of which today is The World Encompassed. Though it was published in 1628, a half century after the famous voyage, its content is thought to be based largely on the journal of Francis Fletcher, the chaplain on the voyage. Fletcher wrote about many aspects of Drake's North American landing site, including its latitude, geography, flora and fauna, a native population. I refer to this source as Fletcher. There are also several maps and globes showing Drake's route, including some by Dutch mapmaker Joachim Hondius. Most such maps were global in scope. But in the 1590s, Hondius also inset into a global map a small map illustrating details of Drake's landing site, including its shape, terrain, plants, and people, even showing some details such as tended fires and a fort-like structure. This map also gave the site the name Nova Albion, which is interpreted as a Latin version of New England, with Albion referring to England's iconic white cliffs of Dover. The Hondius inset may be the best known and most cited map of the famous voyage. I provide a copy of the Hondius inset on the website. But there is also documentation of the famous voyage that did not survive. In particular, the Queen seized and embargoed Drake's official records and forbade his crew from discussing their adventures on pain of death. These records are apparently lost to history, though it seems some of Drake's crew told stories that made it into print. Drake's records may or may not have cast light on where he landed, but their absence leaves a hole in the story and fuels speculation about what exactly the Queen wanted to hide. Advocates of various sites all perform what I call a Fletcher test, that is, an enumeration of how the features of their site correspond to the descriptions provided by Fletcher. They also perform a Hondius test by comparing the shape and features of their proposed site with the shape and features shown in the Hondius inset. Proponents contend that their sites pass both these tests and are therefore at least plausible. In this review, I give each of the five sites passing grades on the Fletcher and Hondius tests. That is, I assume all the sites are plausible as far as those two tests go. I know I just lost some partisans who might reasonably disagree with this shortcut, but this is a podcast. I gave myself an hour, so everyone passes for now. I must acknowledge that all the site advocates and researchers have done substantially more work over many more years than I have, reviewing not just Fletcher and Hondius, but other vintage sources in great detail, including several found in archives in both the Old and New Worlds. Proponents have also conducted site-specific searches for artifacts that could tie Drake to a particular spot. These researchers have all uncovered significant pertinent evidence and advanced plausible hypotheses as to the actual site's location. I do not have the detailed knowledge regarding any specific spot to tell any site proponent or researcher that they are wrong. But I am confident of one thing. they can't all be right. You may be wondering, isn't there already a Drake something somewhere, like in Marin? Which is correct. Marin County lies directly north of San Francisco, across the Golden Gate, the entrance to San Francisco Bay. And Sir Francis Drake's name is all over Marin County. Perhaps the most prominent Drake landmark is the Sir Francis Drake Boulevard, or simply SFD to the locals. SFD starts in the east on San Francisco Bay at Point San Quentin, yes, that San Quentin, and proceeds 44 sometimes winding miles west to Point Reyes, overlooking the Pacific Ocean. Drake's name graces commercial and residential buildings all along SFD. Until recently, a local high school also bore Drake's name, and a whimsical statue of Drake stood at the Larkspur Ferry Landing near San Quentin. The historical inertia behind Marin's claim to Drake is also documented by the cover art for this podcast, which is a picture of a celluloid pinback button printed in the 1910s, commemorating Drake's landing on, quote, Marin County shores, unquote. Toward the west end of SFD is the area of Drake's Bay, the best known and most memorialized of potential Drake landing sites. Drake's Bay got its name from Spanish and English sailors before California statehood. Many advocates, though not all, have long believed Drake landed at Drake's Bay or a nearby location. Several monuments commemorating Drake's landing have been erected in the area by different entities, including the National Park Service. And I gotta say, Drake's Bay looks the part. The bay is near the southwestern end of the Point Reyes Peninsula, which juts into the Pacific Ocean several miles from the rest of the coast. Tall, dun-colored cliffs wrap around the southwest tip of the peninsula, facing both west of the ocean and south to Drake's Bay and more ocean beyond. The cliffs are a backdrop to Drake's Beach, the north shore of Drake's Bay. The bay and beach are both partially sheltered by Point Reyes's fish hook-shaped headlands. I will admit to some local bias when I say the whole area possesses a stark, edge-of-the-world majesty worth seeing for its own sake, if you like some drama in your landscapes. Early sailors to the west coast may well have reasoned that a bay so spectacular must be Drake's. I have posted a map showing Drake's Bay on the website. I have also posted a recent photo of the west end of Drake's Bay, including the tan cliffs, though this one shot does not do the area justice. But Drake's Bay has more than leading man looks. The striking cliffs and the Farallon Islands, clearly visible about 20 miles south-southwest of Drake's Beach, are said to be consistent with Fletcher's accounts of the local cliffs and three islands visible from the landing spot. Fletcher also reported that Drake landed at 38 degrees north latitude, which also matches Drake's Bay. But Drake's Bay's claim as the actual site have long been disputed, and the National Park Service, though sponsoring exhibits that state Drake landed in the area, hedges its bets, stating, for example, that Drake's Bay is the, quote, most likely site, unquote. I have selected five specific locations various advocates and researchers contend are Drake's North American landing site. I chose them mainly because their proponents maintain a current social media presence on behalf of their claims. I will mention such locations supporting websites and Facebook pages. I also identify these resources on my website, heavensoccasionalpods.com. I chose this approach for convenience rather than completeness, and I'm not rejecting any of the other sites that have been proposed over the years. The first site I will discuss is a permutation of Drake's Bay, specifically Drake's Estero, an estuary that drains into Drake's Bay. As I said, I first heard the phrase Drake's Estero in my California history class. I remember the phrase because the Spanish word estero was new to me and so much more poetic than the English word estuary. I will then discuss two sites in Oregon, Whale Cove and Nehalem Bay. I will then return to Marin County to introduce the last two sites, Strawberry Cove and Agate Beach. These proponents' passion for their subjects helps demonstrate that in many minds, the controversy over Drake's North American landing site is not resolved. I have posted rough maps of these Marin County and Oregon locations on the website. I will summarize a basic case for each site and provide some commentary. Though I give all sites a pass on Fletcher and Hondius tests, I will briefly mention three topics Fletcher addressed regarding Drake's landing site. The first two are the landing site's latitude and the characteristics of the local native population, two matters disputed between those proposing Marin County and those proposing Oregon landing sites. I will also discuss how advocates identify the local rodents Fletcher called conies as a minor illustration of how prone the sources are to alternate interpretations. According to the Oxford English Dictionary, coney, spelled C-O-N-E-Y, was a then-current English word for rabbit. Though Fletcher's North American conies had some un-rabbit-like features, such as a bald, rat-like tail. Thus far, I have mostly made references to a potential Drake landing site in Drake's Bay. But Drake's Bay is only partially sheltered from the Pacific Ocean and Spanish Eyes. Such doubts fueled additional research for alternate nearby spots. Notably, the Drake Navigators Guild, formed right after World War II by Drake enthusiasts, many with nautical backgrounds, began to look for locations near 38 degrees north that in particular resembled the Hondius Inset. After considerable effort, the Guild identified a cove within Drake's Estero that appeared to fit Hondius. The Guild conducted additional research to assess whether the cove, which the Guild called Drake's Cove, was more than a coincidental match to Hondius. For example, they verified that the Golden Hind could make its way into the cove from Drake's Bay. They also point to another contemporary map of the site, the Dudley map, as also being a good match for the cove. I provide a copy of the Dudley map on the website. Fletcher wrote much about the native population, including their language, housing, diet, clothing, and other habits, and non-hostile behavior toward Drake and his crew. Based on Fletcher's description, influential mid-20th century researchers concluded that the natives Drake met were Coast Miwok, who were believed to have then populated Marin County. Language clues were apparently important in reaching this conclusion. The Guild also identified the conies as pocket gophers, which have the requisite bald tail Fletcher described. The Guild also helped conduct some archaeological research of the cove, which I will discuss later. And like Drake's Bay in general, the cove looks the part, though it was dammed and filled in by a rancher several decades ago. Drake's Estero and the cove are accessible by a mile-plus walk along Drake's Beach. The Guild has placed an anchor and plaque at the location. However, though the National Park Service acknowledges Drake's Bay generally as the, quote, most likely site, unquote, it does not appear to endorse any more specific location, such as Drake's Estero or the cove. For more information, see the Guild's website at drakenavigatorsguild.squarespace.com or their Facebook page in their name. Again, these citations are all provided on my website. If you visit Drake's Estero, please go with someone who knows the way and, in particular, understands the tides, or you may need to wade back to your car. The Guild offers guided tours to the cove in the summer, when tides permit. I will discuss Drake's Estero and the cove more later, particularly the Chinese porcelain artifacts found in nearby native archaeological sites. Until then, know that the Guild believes some of these fragments were from porcelains left by Drake. To visit our next site, let's head up the Pacific coast a few hundred miles into Oregon, which is a long way north of 38 degrees. Whale Cove, Oregon is a smallish inlet off the Pacific Ocean just south of 45 degrees north. Though some early accounts of Drake's landing place the site at 38 degrees north, other sources from Drake's time point to a landing at a higher latitude, such as 44 degrees north. For example, about a century ago, archaeologist Zelia Nuttall found enlightening transcripts from the Spanish Inquisition in colonial archives in Mexico City. And no one was expecting that. Francis Drake's nephew John had served as his cabin boy on the famous voyage and was privy to Drake's doings. John Drake was captured on his next voyage to the New World and interrogated twice by the Spanish. who were obsessed with the devil, Drake. In these transcripts, the younger Drake testified that the Golden Hind had landed at 44 degrees north. Oregon advocates, such as Bob Ward of the Drake in Oregon Society, also cite other period sources supporting a landing in the 40s. They also contend that the early official document reporting a landing at 38 degrees was deliberately falsified by English authorities, who wanted to stake a claim to the West Coast as far south as possible to impinge on Spain's existing colonial claims, or maybe to obscure Drake's search for the Northwest Passage. The Society also argues Whale Cove is the only bay on the Oregon coast that matches the Hondius Insight, or also matches the Dudley map I just mentioned in connection with Drake's Estero. Whale Cove advocates also contend the site meets the Fletcher test. For example, archaeologist Melissa Darby's ethnographic analysis led her to conclude that Oregon natives matched Fletcher's description at least as well as did the Coast Miwok. Her linguistic analysis led to the hypothesis that the natives spoke to Drake in a language of Oregonian origin, although not local to Whale Cove itself. And the Society also contends the conies that Drake's Estero proponents claim were pocket gophers were actually muskrats. However, despite some digging, no conclusive Drake artifacts have yet been unearthed at Whale Cove. A 1700 tsunami that ravaged the northwest coast may have washed away such artifacts and widened the interior of the cove, though the cove's basalt exterior was presumably not affected. Whale Cove appears to be a plausible careening site. The cove is not today considered navigable and was presumably a challenge in Drake's day, too. But in his search for a spot to careen, Drake would likely have accepted such a challenge and was capable of meeting it. Whale Cove can be viewed from a platform on its south side. The platform is a short hike from the Rocky Creek State Park parking lot just off U.S. Highway 101, but the hike is difficult over uneven ground. The signage at the platform provides information about the cove and its environs, but makes no mention of a possible Drake landing. The presumed area of the landing site itself on the northeast flank of the cove is visible from the platform. However, the site is on private property and not accessible. The Drake in Oregon Society's website is drakeinoregon.com. Aspects of this hypothesis are also developed in Darby's 2019 book, Thunder Go North. Less than 1 degree north of Whale Cove, not quite to 46 degrees, is our next site, Nehalem Bay. The gradual process of identifying Nehalem Bay as Drake's landfall began with early American settlers who discovered curious artifacts on the slopes of nearby Neocony Mountain. Specifically, settlers found large rocks incised with arrows and other markings, some with uppercase European script, and cairns or organized piles of rocks. For example, an early American settler is said to have, quote, hooked his plow into two huge stones bearing strange markings, end quote. These objects were apparently unique in the area and not believed to be artifacts of local natives. In the late 1960s, two local historians began organizing and researching these odd artifacts, collecting even more items, and trying to interpret the unusual array of stones and cairns. A graduate student from Oregon State University later helped them map the artifact field based on the items still in place and the historian's memory of other items' prior locations. As I interpret the map of this artifact field, several cairns make a 4,500-foot, roughly north-south line between a single cairn near sea level and several cairns nearly 800 feet above sea level on the south side of Neocony Mountain. Several grooved rocks were also found, mostly within several hundred feet of this line. And about 5,000 feet west-northwest of this line is an apparently related carved cliff face. Though the map shows barely a dozen artifact locations, it is also reported that up to 40 such incised stones or cairns were once part of the field. I provide maps of this artifact field on the website. The historians concluded the various rocks and cairns were part of a survey conducted using vintage English methods and units, which pointed to Drake's voyage as their origin. This conclusion was bolstered by the Oregon State student's final master's project. Another local historian, Gary Gitson, also cites quotations in Fletcher suggesting that Drake planned to conduct some sort of survey of the voyage, though Fletcher does not directly report that Drake conducted a survey while ashore on the West Coast. Currently, the Sir Francis Drake Association, led by Gitson, has researched the consistency of the landing site near Mount Neocony, Nehalem Bay, with Fletcher, Hondius, and other sources. They contend that Nehalem Bay nicely fits the outline of the Hondius inset, even accounting for the likely changes in the bay's geography since American settlement and the 1700 tsunami. They further argue that Nehalem Bay's flora, fauna, and native population match Fletcher's descriptions, and they contend that Neocony Mountain could have been the cliffs that Fletcher described. Nehalem Bay today looks like it might have been Drake's landing site, though the bay's geography has likely changed in the last few centuries. I'll provide some comments in the artifact field that triggered this claim later. For more information, see the Sir Francis Drake Association's website at sirfrancisdrakeassociation.org. More detailed information about Drake is also available at the website fortnehalem.net. Related documents and artifacts are also on view at three nearby museums that I cite on my website. Gitson's books are available on Amazon. The Nehalem Bay site is visible from several vantage points, but local knowledge is necessary. The next site is almost 500 miles south down U.S. Highway 101, back in Marin County, but inside of San Francisco Bay. Back here near 38 degrees, Drake enthusiasts have long debated whether Drake careened outside the Golden Gate, say as in Drake's Bay, or sailed through the Golden Gate and careened in San Francisco Bay proper. For example, the late Robert Power contended that Drake careened at San Quentin Cove. Finding and navigating the Golden Gate, and then finding a place to careen, would have posed additional challenges to Drake, but like Whale Cove, it is plausible that Drake would have accepted and met these challenges. This in-bay location is Strawberry Cove, a site identified only in recent years based on its apparent consistency with Fletcher, Hondius, and the like. Strawberry Cove lies toward the north end of Richardson Bay, the large inlet immediately to a ship's port, that's left to us landlubbers, after it enters San Francisco Bay. The founder of the Sir Francis Drake Foundation, Dwayne Van Diemen, began a search for Drake's landing site in 2001, and after much research and scouting, concluded in 2008 that Strawberry Cove, in the city of Mill Valley, was the actual site. He then spent another 10 years conducting more research and analysis before posting his findings online in 2018. He believes the cove matches Hondius and Fletcher better than the alternatives. He acknowledges that the channels inside the bay would not today allow a ship of the Golden Hind's size to reach the cove, but has conducted historic research on the bay and believes that the channel into Strawberry Cove was much deeper before the farming, logging, and other development that took off after statehood. The foundation engaged excavations of parts of the cove with the help of many local volunteers, but only found decomposed iron. Such artifacts could have a more recent origin and are thus not conclusive of Drake's presence. Despite the potential strong circumstantial case for the cove, there is not yet an artifactual trump card for the claim. But perhaps the biggest challenge to the acceptance of Strawberry Cove as the actual site is its lack of historical inertia. This is a given since the hypothesis was advanced only a few years ago. So there is no consideration of the cove in any sources except for the Foundation's new website and occasional local press articles. To be clear, I do not argue that Strawberry Cove is Drake's landing site, but I do believe the case for it may be underappreciated. The website for the Sir Francis Drake Foundation is sfdrakefoundation.org. Strawberry Cove is the most accessible and urbanized of the five sites I present. Strawberry Cove Park is in the city of Mill Valley within sight and sound of Highway 101. Though the park has some benches and tables, it has no running water or other facilities. Finally, about a dozen miles back outside the Golden Gate is the last site I present, Agate Beach. This location is in the town of Bolinas on the west side of the southern end of the Point Reyes Peninsula, about another dozen miles southeast of Drake's Bay as the gull flies. The peninsula's headlands, which partially shelter Drake's Bay, are prominent to the northwest of Agate Beach in clear weather. The Agate Beach site should not be confused with another possible site, Bolinas Lagoon, which lies on the east side of the peninsula, just a couple miles away. Like Nehalem Bay, Agate Beach emerged as a plausible Drake landing site based on the accidental discovery of artifacts. In 1958, the late George Epperson unexpectedly found what he identified as a pirate boarding hook on Agate Beach, which inspired him to more artifact hunting and research. Epperson collected literally hundreds of artifacts from Agate Beach, some found and provided by other beachcombers. Among the other artifacts Epperson believed he found were stones used for ship's ballast, crafted metal objects, and wooden beams and planks. Epperson conducted detailed research into the artifacts and had several wooden objects carbon dated. I will review these radiocarbon dating results later. For the moment, let's just say the results make these artifacts intriguing. Epperson's also concluded that Agate Beach met the descriptions and views of the landing site provided by Fletcher, Hondius, and other sources. He did note that the beach now has lower water depth than was recorded in earlier charts, but attributed that to ongoing uplift from the San Andreas Fault, which runs through nearby Bolinas Lagoon. He identified Fletcher's conies as opossums. In addition, some of the clues cited above as supporting a Drake's Bay landing, such as the cliffs, islands, and porcelain fragments, might also be consistent with an Agate Beach landing. For more information regarding Agate Beach, search Facebook for the page titled, quote, Sir Francis Drake's Careening Site in Marin County, end quote. The page contains links to pictures of the site and of artifacts and documents summarizing Epperson's research and conclusions. Agate Beach is readily accessible at the southwest corner of Bolinas, but use your GPS for directions since locals take down any highway sign the state puts up to direct drivers into Bolinas. The beach can be difficult walking, wear shoes that provide good support, and can get wet. And again, respect the tides. Low tides offer great tide pooling, but high tides can cut off parts of the beach. So there are at least a few spots that are plausible Drake landing sites based on Fletcher, Hondius, and other basic tests. But based on my admittedly limited review, I saw no clear winner among the five sites based on such circumstantial evidence. Again, site partisans may reasonably disagree. But I am skeptical that detailed comparative analysis of each spot based on such tests can or would produce a clear winner. But firm artifactual evidence, unique to a given location, could give such a site a strong link to Drake's Landing. Each site's advocate has engaged in some type of archaeological search or artifact hunt with varying results. A number of objects of potential interest have been found, but, except as discussed anon, few offer the provenance, uniqueness, and vintage to serve as strong evidence of Drake's Landing site. There are, at this point, three sets of artifacts worth mention. But first, back to that holy grail of Drake's West Coast artifacts, the plate of brass. As I said, I first heard the phrase almost 50 years ago, before it was widely branded as a hoax. The tale starts with Fletcher's journal, which mentioned that Drake had left a plate of brass nailed to a post claiming the area for the Queen. In 1936, a plate of brass generally matching Fletcher's description was found in Marin County, after having apparently been found and abandoned a few years earlier. The plate was turned over to Professor Herbert Bolton, the chair of UC Berkeley's History Department, for validation. Bolton, who had been encouraging students to keep an eye out for Drake's original plate of brass in Marin County, quickly declared the as-found plate of brass to be Drake's original and began promoting the find. Bolton even announced the find to his history class and dramatically led students out the classroom door and encouraged them to search for more Drake artifacts. The university later engaged experts in electrochemistry and metallurgy to analyze the as-found plate. They concluded, for various reasons, that the as-found plate was Drake's original. These endorsements of the as-found plate led to its wide acceptance as the real thing. But, as typical of Drake historiography, there were always doubters. A later generation at UC Berkeley had the plate retested in 1977. These studies concluded that the brass was made in the 19th or 20th centuries and thus could not have been Drake's original. That is, the as-found blade of brass was a hoax. Site advocates have a range of opinions about the as-found plate. Some Marin County site proponents still believe it is in fact Drake's original plate of brass and suggest additional testing and analysis. Of those who believe the as-found plate is a hoax, hypotheses include it being a practical joke gone wrong to a deliberate plot intended to prove Drake landed in Marin County. If one accepts the as-found plate of brass as Drake's original, the credibility of Marin County locations is greatly enhanced. However, depending on the other evidence, the as-found plate doesn't have to be Drake's original to conclude that Drake landed nearby. That is, even if the as-found plate is a hoax, that doesn't mean Drake didn't land in Marin County. Sorry for the double negatives. I gave the as-found plate of brass no consideration in my review. I have never found the stories about its 20th century discovery credible, and am skeptical that it was Drake's original. But even though some today call it a prank, it was not a harmless joke, given the fog of brass it cast over several decades of Drake scholarship. But there are other artifacts that, though less celebrated, may be more telling. I will review three in particular: the Drake's Bay Area porcelain fragments, the Nehalem Bay Stone Formation, and the Agate Beach artifacts. I am not discussing any artifacts possibly related to Whale Cove or Strawberry Cove, but believe that those sites' advocates may have more complete and hopeful stories to tell. Native sites around Drake's Bay have been studied extensively from the 1940s to the 1960s by local college researchers and the Drake Navigators Guild, and since then by the National Park Service. The artifacts found in these digs that are most interesting to Drake enthusiasts are fragments of Chinese porcelain. Drake is known to have seized 4 cases of porcelain goods from a Spanish ship off Mexico before sailing north. But there is no record of the disposition of these porcelains, lending credence to the idea that Drake left them behind when he sailed for home. Such fragments would seem to provide strong evidence of a Drake landing in the area of Drake's Bay. But, of course, there's a but. Another ship, the Spanish Manila galleon San Agustin, captained by Sebastian Rodriguez Cermeño, is known to have wrecked in Drake's Bay in 1595, only 16 years after Drake's North American landing. Cermeño's cargo included crates of porcelains that were lost when it sank, but later washed ashore and were repurposed by the natives. So by itself, the finding of porcelains did not necessarily show that Drake landed in the area. The Guild, in conjunction with San Francisco's Asian Art Museum, conducted a study that concluded that porcelain artifacts were from 2 different cargoes, that is, from both Cermeño and Drake, based on the fragments' styles and the amount of, quote, surf tumbling, unquote. It showed such tumbling being associated with the porcelain's journey from Cermeño's wreckage through surf and sand to dry land. The Guild concluded that while 2/3 of the fragments were from Cermeño, about 1/3 were attributable to Drake. Thus, it argued, the porcelain artifacts show that Drake landed in the area of Drake's Bay. These findings, along with examples of these 2 groupings of porcelain, are on display at the National Park Service's Bear Valley Visitor Center in Point Reyes. However, the visitor center display also acknowledges that the location of Drake's landing site is still disputed. In a 2011 UC Berkeley PhD dissertation mentioned these 2 cargo findings, but suggested instead that all the porcelains were from Cermeño's cargo. But a 2014 paper based on portable X-ray fluorescence examination of purported Drake and Cermenio porcelains found differences among the fragments consistent with a two-cargo theory, though the author noted that the single-cargo theory could not be rejected. Disputes over the one- and two-cargo theories thus continue. Additional studies might cast more light on whose porcelains they were. Discovery of apparent pre-Anglo immigration artifacts was the spur that led to the research that concluded Nehalem Bay was Drake's landing site. As discussed, an artifact field mapped on the south ocean-facing side of Neocone Mountain contained at least a dozen marked stones and cairns, which were arranged in an apparently coordinated pattern. No similar artifact fields were apparently produced by the local native populations, and the presence on some stones of European script implicates their involvement. The stones and cairns might thus be reasonably explained as a 16th century English survey of the area, which leads directly to Drake. Drake-era references to such a survey would enhance the status of these artifacts, but Gitson cites references in Fletcher to the effect that the English intended to conduct surveys on the famous voyage, and that the natives helped Drake's crew with moving heavy items, possibly large stones. At a minimum, the artifact field on Neocone Mountain is a puzzle. I do not have a better explanation than Drake, but I will mention some other, frankly, more speculative possibilities shortly. Back to Agate Beach and its artifacts. I reviewed the 9 radiocarbon dating reports available on the Advocate's Facebook page and, with some guidance, updated the conversions from the reported radiocarbon age to calendar age. By my interpretations of the results, tests on 6 of these artifacts placed them plausibly in Drake's time, plus or minus several decades of limited European contact with the west coast of North America. It should be noted that some calibrations yielded much smaller, but still non-trivial probabilities than an artifact might also be from the 18th, 19th, or even the 20th centuries. I have posted these 6 radiocarbon studies and updated calibrations on the website. The 6 tested items include what Epperson believed to be the great firm post used to mount the plate of brass, with the others being parts of ships. If we accept the dating of these artifacts to Drake's era, these results are still not conclusive that Drake careened at Agate Beach, as there are other possible sources for artifacts from Drake's day. But not many. Only 5 documented European expeditions reached the Pacific coast of North America by the early 1600s, and of those, only Drake and Cermenio came ashore north of the Golden Gate. There were no documented European expeditions to the coast after 1603 until the later 1700s. These dated wooden objects, combined with other gnawed wooden artifacts apparently matching the descriptions of vintage sailing equipment, makes these dating results of great interest, regardless of the artifact's possible connection to Drake. The most obvious source for these artifacts is, of course, the Golden Hind, or Drake's encampment. Cermenio's wreckage might also be the origin, though it is believed to have sunk up the coast in or near Drake's Bay. There is another Drake-related possibility I have yet to mention. The Spanish frigate that Drake captured from Rodrigo Tello off Costa Rica just before sailing to North America. The ship is commonly cited as Tello's Bark, though the spelling T-E-L-L-O is Tello in Spanish phonetics. Though only half of the Golden Hind's near 80-foot length and half its 40-foot width, Tello's Bark, manned by members of Drake's crew, followed the larger ship on its long counterclockwise loop from Mexico to North America. The bark no doubt proved useful to Drake in exploring and surviving the west coast, including serving as a floating anchor point for careening the Golden Hind. Despite its value, the bark was apparently not sufficiently seaworthy to follow the Golden Hind all the way back to England. John Drake told the Inquisition that they left Tello's bark behind in Nova Albion. Further, his uncle Francis left a dozen or more men behind, who might have been meant to crew the bark, but the bark and the men have also been lost to history. Theories about the bark's fate include the suggestion it was burned to the waterline or left for the use of the remaining crew, perhaps to help them search for the Northwest Passage. Epperson believed one of his appropriately dated artifacts is a piece of Tello's bark. Or perhaps the Nehalem Bay artifact feels created by the crew of Tello's bark on a voyage up the coast. Beyond the above ships, potential sources of artifacts on Agate Beach dated to Drake's time get really speculative. Perhaps the least speculative of such really speculative possibilities is the ship Content, which started on the circumnavigation voyage of Englishman Thomas Cavendish about 10 years after Drake. However, the Content was also lost to history when it separated from Cavendish's flagship after they divided up a haul of captured Spanish treasure, its last reported location well south of Agate Beach. Some have speculated the Content went its own way once the crew got their share of booty, but others believe the Content split from Cavendish to search for the Northwest Passage consistent with that voyage's plan. If so, the Content might be the source of some artifacts at Agate Beach or Nehalem Bay. Epperson suggested that some of the appropriately dated artifacts might be from the Content. After the Content, we are down to random flotsam theories, that is, the notion that artifacts might be debris that randomly washed ashore. Best argument for this theory is that, starting in 1565, one or two Spanish Manila galleons per year sailed down the west coast on their return trips from Manila to Acapulco, though they generally stayed well away from the rocky shore. Though a single artifact might possibly be such flotsam, even I won't suggest that this hypothesis would explain the multiple artifacts found near Drake's Bay, Nehalem Bay, or Agate Beach. The background to Drake's decision to leave men behind is also murky. Some might have deserted, or been deliberately marooned, or volunteered to stay, perhaps to search for the Northwest Passage on Tello's bark, or some combination thereof. Though these men's fates are unknown, a Spanish priest exploring the San Francisco Bay Area in the 1770s reportedly found natives with European features, such as pale skin, blonde hair, and beards, suggesting that Drake's stranded men may have left some genetic artifacts. Such reports are tantalizing, but are hard to attribute firmly to Drake's men, especially after 2 centuries, say 8 to 10 generations, had passed between Drake's landing and Spanish explorers' overland exploration of the San Francisco Bay Area. Let's come back to the here and now and the facts we have in hand, namely, the carbon dating reports of several Agate Beach artifacts. I cannot personally vouch for the provenance or significance of these artifacts or any of George Epperson's specific conclusions, and I get queasy appearing to endorse speculative explanations for the genesis of these or any other objects. But maritime artifacts from California that are credibly dated to the late 1500s deserve attention and study. Instead, they are being stored by the Epperson family and largely ignored by academics and the public. I will gather my breath and return to this topic shortly. So Francis Drake made it home to his hero's welcome, thanks in part to his successful careening in North America. But devotees have long disagreed as to exactly where he landed. I've attempted to summarize the state of this debate as now framed by advocates, current social media, and publications. But this hour is only a teaser. I have omitted details about the sites I present, and did not discuss other postulated sites or other details about Drake's North American landing. If you want to look for yourself, I've given the handles of the advocates' social media sites in this hour and on the website. I also provide additional materials on the website. For more detailed information on the subject, I recommend Warren Hanna's 1979 book, Lost Harbor, as an encyclopedic, if California-centric, historiography. Lost Harbor is out of print, but should be available used. I also recommend archaeologist Melissa Darby's 2019 book, Thunder Go North, for an updated historiography that questions claims for California sites. And if the above sources grab your fancy, there is much more. And what do I think, you may ask? As I've already hinted, even after all the research I've done, I am not ready to offer a definitive opinion. You might think that weak. Fair enough. But other researchers who do a lot more than me have reached the same frustrated conclusion. Rather, asking where Drake landed is somewhat akin to asking, who is Jack the Ripper? Or who is D.B. Cooper? Other mysteries still debated today. But the various artifacts are intriguing. Further review of the Drake's Bay porcelains and the Nehalem Bay rock formation would be welcome, as would consideration of any possible future finds that might relate to Drake, wherever and whatever they may be. The most tantalizing are the Agate Beach artifacts, which seem to offer a window into California history that has not been opened. Again, Agate Beach site advocates provide at least 6 separate radiocarbon dating reports identifying various wooden artifacts as being reasonably dated to the 1570s, give or take a few decades, a period of very limited European contact with North America's West Coast. See the website for copies of those studies. Further research could provide more insights into these items, whether or not Drake had anything to do with them. Researchers of various stripes should make an effort to evaluate the Agate Beach artifacts' carbon dating, provenance, and significance. I hope you found this last hour entertaining and informative. If you want to communicate further, head to the website, gevinsoccasionalpods.com, where you may post comments or contact me directly. I plan to issue more podcasts on various California history topics, but not quickly. That's why it's occasional. Just follow this pod if you want to know when I post another one. Thank you to all those who provided comments or information while I developed this podcast. Thanks in particular to David Sewell and my daughter Nicole for their review and comment. Thanks to Jeff Holden for helping with my vocal track and Evan Clayberg for developing my website. I would also like to credit Pixabay.com for the background soundtracks. Finally, thanks to the site advocates for the time, effort, and passion you have devoted to your research and the time you spent with me. May the plate of brass unearth itself right where it belongs. Thank you for listening.